Hello, I'm Matt Janes, a member of the Publications Committee of the Quarterly Report, the official magazine of APTA Home Health. Joining me today is Amanda Fabozzi, where she will be speaking on the topic of home health value-based purchasing operational considerations. So Amanda, thank you for joining today. So glad you're going to speak on home health value-based purchasing. It's so important.
Thank you so much for having me, Matt. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
Awesome. So let's just get started. I know everyone is planning value-based purchasing, especially, you know, we're in that kind of that pre-performance year, right? So tell me a little bit about your background and why you are here today to talk about value-based purchasing.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, my name is Amanda Fabozzi, and I am a physical therapist. And I had the pleasure of getting to practice in two demonstration states from 2017 to 2020, Florida and Tennessee. And during that time, I had different positions, everything from field clinician to area rehab director, and then finally as a branch director. With all of these roles, I spent a good bit of time tracking outcomes, goal setting, action planning, and educating my teams. So I'm here today to share some lesson learned. We are in the pre-implementation year with the first performance year quickly approaching in 2023.
All right. Thanks, Amanda. That's great information about your background. Really relevant, of course. You've already lived it, right? So now when we think about the day-to-day processes that should be a focus over the next few months, what would you say are some of the most important things that someone should consider?
Yeah, so I would say one of the things to really focus on is to fine-tune the your process to ensure utmost OASIS accuracy. There are going to be 12 OASIS measures that make up 35% of the home health value-based purchasing total performance score. So some of the things that might be important to focus on during this pre-implementation year would be, say, for instance, timely completion of your start of care visits and your add-on visits, followed by timely documentation of those visits. The earlier you can get that done, you can start the collaboration process between your team members to make sure that that OASIS is accurate as possible. And then really looking at your OASIS review process, who are those people that are performing your OASIS review? What steps are they taking? Is there a structured process to review certain details of that document? And are these individuals educated on some things that are going to change under home health value-based purchasing? Maybe some areas of the OASIS where they should put some increased focus. And then going ahead and thinking about creating an education plan for home health value-based purchasing so we can go ahead and start educating the team.
Perfect. And education is so important, right? I mean, especially when we talk about the accuracy of the OASIS, it's one of the continued items that we all speak of in the home health space is just being accurate or the most accurate we can be with performing that OASIS. So no, great detail on that. Appreciate that. So in thinking about staff education, right? So tell me why it's so important to educate your staff, especially. It's not a one and done. So why is it important for ongoing staff education?
Yeah, so it's certainly not a one and done. There are multiple drivers for the home health value-based purchasing performance score. OASIS measures, you have claims-based measures, and then you have your patient satisfaction results. So education has to be ongoing and maybe focus on the most immediate need. I would also suggest choosing a couple of specific areas for education so that the information is digestible for your team. And then again, making sure that the education is ongoing so that the information remains fresh. I found that it was helpful to identify kind of an education lead or appoint an education lead within the organization to really own this education piece, provide the education, and then follow up with monitoring.
Perfect, Amanda. So completely understand and agree. Education is so important. When we talk about, you mentioned that education leader, right? So when you find that education leader, how do you define roles and responsibilities? Or more importantly, how do you identify a leader to actually perform that education?
Sure. The education leader may be more than one person. It might be something where you can divide the responsibilities between, say, multiple individuals within a branch. But ultimately, these individuals who are leading the education need to understand the home health value-based purchasing drivers and the scoring methodology, at least generally, so that they can teach to it. They need to have access in some way to be able to monitor performance and recognize that when education is provided, the results and performance are not immediate. There's typically a delay. You have to wait to be able to see the results of the education by way of, say, improved outcomes. And then it would also be important to have a way to test or gauge competency level for your clinicians who potentially received the education, just to make sure that it's sunk in and identify if there are additional education needs that would be follow-up to that.
So, in thinking about education, right, there's a lot of ways to deliver education in today's world, right? Technology, audio, video, different forms, different modes of communication strategies. So, what are some of those strategies that you have found to be effective when planning and delivering education?
Sure. I think that multiple forms of delivery can be effective. I think that it's important to deliver the education on a regular cadence, say maybe monthly. You choose a couple of topics and deliver education, followed up by monitoring. And then to deliver the education in, like I said, bite-sized, digestible pieces so that your clinicians can really take it in, process what they learned, and then apply it to what they're doing in the field. Supervisory visits are another effective way to see where some discrepancies may be with OASIS scoring or OASIS accuracy. It would give your leadership the opportunity to observe the clinician's process and to provide a patient-specific, have a patient-specific conversation with them. It's also important to remember that the training, when you select who needs to be involved in the training, that we want to include all of our OASIS clinicians, anyone within your organization who is completing OASIS. That may include your OTs and speech therapists, even though the volume of the start of cares that they're performing may not be as high. Those clinicians are performing OASIS at other time points. And under home health value-based purchasing, the discharge scores, for instance, are equally as important as those start of care scores when we're looking at progress for the patient.
And it's so true, Amanda, exactly what you said, the assessing clinician, right? Often I really find agencies that forget about the discharge component. And it's so important to think about not only, again, that sock or that rock, but also the discharge and finding those 2 points in time and ultimately that outcome change for that patient. So getting to orientation, though, clearly, you've got to onboard clinicians, new clinicians to home health as an example. So what have you found to be important to create a successful orientation experience to set up your new clinician to score accurately?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will start by saying that employee turnover is a huge pain point in home health right now. And when you have employee turnover, it really does hurt your quality because when you onboard new employees, you're really starting from square one as far as the education. You have to teach them the intent of the OASIS items. You have to ride with them and make sure they understand the scoring, how to observe the patient's performance prior to scoring. All of that takes time and resources. Supervisory visits, again, can be critical to the success of an orientee. Being able to have someone with them to talk through a scoring scenario helps them to really understand and be able to apply that information to the next patient. And then to just keep a close eye on that new employee to make sure that they understand, maybe even pair them with a peer or a mentor that they can reach out to if they have questions. And ultimately, just educating them on the importance of that OASIS accuracy from start to finish.
Thank you, Amanda, for that. And truly, yes, turnover is an issue for really all of healthcare, especially our nursing shortages today as well. So, in thinking of outcome monitoring, and it's clearly something we want to continue to do and regularly perform, what are some of the strategies that you would recommend personally to monitor outcomes?
Sure. So I would say that constant monitoring and action planning is going to be completely necessary. I would recommend the PDSA thought process, which means plan, do, study, act. And maybe we can just talk through an example here together. So say, for instance, your area of focus for your organization is your acute care hospitalization rate. And this is a big driver of total performance score. The ACH rate is over 26% of the total performance score. So it's really important, and it's going to be a focus for everyone when the nationwide expansion occurs. So you might start with a plan by saying that identifying that this is the issue and deciding that you're going to, say, perform a retrospective chart audit for all of your hospitalized patients over the next month. From there, you would execute the plan and then look at your results. So after that month is over, you would go in and say, okay, well, we looked at all of these cases of hospitalized patients, and we found that half of them had a cardiopulmonary diagnosis, and we found that the majority of them were hospitalizing in the first 30 days of the episode. So what can I do with that information, and how can we create the next action? How can we create the next plan? So you may take that information and decide that, okay, to build onto this action plan, we're going to flag these patients as high risk at the time of referral. We are going to front load visits and make sure we don't have gaps in care during those first 30 days when the patient's really high risk. We may even have specific high risk patient meetings with our staff every week to make sure that we're identifying any issues as early as possible. So it is a cycle. The action plan is not just we do it once and we're done with it. You really have to build on what you're doing and constantly monitor and assess.
Thank you, Amanda. And PDSA is so important when we think about, you know, QAPI, performance improvement, and all those things that we need to do to ensure that we're delivering, you know, appropriate processes and quality and monitoring and all those things. So thank you for that reminder as well. And looking at the value of physical therapy as a practice, as a profession, you know, we think about that perspective. So what do we really want to think about when we talk about that value perspective as we look to succeed under this home health value-based purchasing model?
Absolutely. So PTs are really uniquely positioned to be able to assess and score OASIS functional measures that are important under home health value-based purchasing. And as long as they have proper education and training about the intent of each of these items, the PTs can really effectively observe the patient's performance with a high attention to the safety component, which is so important to the scoring accuracy. And because safe mobility is necessary for independence and PTs are the experts in all things mobility, it just makes sense for the PT professionals to be involved in the scoring process whenever possible.
Thank you, Amanda, for sharing your perspective about value, what physical therapy brings to home health practice, about function, and of course, value-based purchasing within home health practice. My name is Matt James. Thanks for listening to this podcast and all you do for physical therapy.